Tapping into the beauty of a child's innate spiritual nature, providing a way to transform tough moments into unexpected yet welcome life lessons. Stay tuned. Welcome to the Healthy Baby Boomers Network Blog Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, licensed mental health counselor, healing through love, relationship healer, somatic body psychotherapist, and health and wellness coach, helping men and women heal their bodies and their relationships through love. Author of the Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me book series, the romantic novel Love in the Blizzard of Life, and creator of the Healing Through Love Lessons. This show is all about living your life dreams, fulfilling your life purpose, and creating and sustaining love and health and total well-being for the rest of your life, no matter what age you are right now. In every episode, I speak with vibrant, exciting, and positive men and women who keep proving that life can and often does get better and better as we reach our 40s, 50s, 60s, and beyond. And today, I'm going to be speaking with someone who's talking about a much earlier age and how important that is. Ariane de Bonvoisin grew up in 6 countries across 3 continents. Her economics and international relations degree from the London School of Economics led to her career at the Boston Consulting Group, working in over a dozen countries. After an MBA from Stanford University, she was a digital media fund managing director at the Time Warner and later CEO, chief change optimist at first30days.com media company. Appearances on dozens of TV and radio shows, author of The First 30 Days, Your Guide to Making Any Change Easier, led to her recent book series, Giggles and Joy, Spiritual Life Lessons for Kids, and her TED Talk about the life skills we need to teach our kids. She's also an accomplished athlete, having reached the summit of Mount Kilimanjaro, and filmed in the movie The High Pass, A Motorcycle Journey Through the Himalayas, to name a few of her amazing feats. So I am absolutely delighted to be speaking with you today, Ariane de Bonvoisin. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Erica. Thanks for the introduction. And it's, I'm in my 40s, and, you know, I believe that great things happen in every year, every decade, and the sooner we teach that to our tiny humans, the happier they're going to be.
So I'd love you to just tell us a little bit. I talked about it, but tell us what it was like. You lived in 6 countries and 3 continents, mm-hmm. and then you were educated in economics and an MBA, and you managed a digital media company. How did you go from all of that to writing books for children?
Well, you know, I have a funny accent. Most people are like, oh, my God, can hardly understand her. She's weird. So I have a strange accent. I was born in the U.S. I was born in New York. My parents are French and Belgian. And I went to, 3 different continents, the U.S., Europe, and Asia. Most of my childhood was in Asia, exposed to a lot of change growing up, different cultures, different religions, different foods, different schools. And, what was valued in my family was safety and education and having a good job. And so to please my parents, I took that route for a little while and kind of ignored a little bit of my own heart's calling, my own soul, my own spirit, and what I was here to be doing and learning on the planet. So I did the more traditional route. I went to top schools, top universities, MBAs, did what was expected of me. And I climbed a very high ladder. I had a lot of what I was told to go get and told that would make me happy. And in my early 30s, I realized that I'd somewhat climbed the wrong ladder, or it was leaning up against the wrong wall. And I had so much, and yet I felt very empty and unfulfilled, which was a bit of a shock when, you know, you spend a few decades mm-hmm. of your life kind of going after something and it doesn't give you all the rewards that you've been promised. And I feel so many people are feeling that today and feeling a little worn down and kind of going, you know, I was supposed to be happy. I've worked my whole life, or I've been a good father or a good husband. And, you know, my big epiphany at the time was really turning inward and kind of listening to myself and listening to my own intuition and not what the world was telling me about my life. And my intuition had been very strong that I needed to do something that made a difference, that was meaningful, that served my fellow human beings. And, you know, long story short, I went on my own adventure, both inner and outer, through a lot of teachers, a lot of books, workshops, you know, more of a spiritual path as well. And I just started asking some of life's deeper questions. And through that, I came to write books on life changes. Obviously, I'd been through a few of my own. I also broke off an engagement. So the change was kind of all over in every area of my life. And I came back to being more true to myself. And I think career-wise, you know, I've focused on giving grown-ups life skills that I feel we've been missing in our childhood and missing in our education, and that we're also focused at being, you know, educated above the neck, that we forget the heart, we forget the spirit. And what led me to the kids' book series, Giggles and Joy, is that we need to start young. We need to help build up their soul, their spirit. We need to ask them the right questions. We need to give them the tools, you know, self-kindness and self-forgiveness and breathing and appreciating their body and getting them find their dream. We need to do that much sooner than we're doing. So that's what led to the kids' books.
Your books are absolutely amazing. They're beautiful. And since you talked about change, I just want to read a little bit from your book. Change can be small, like cutting your hair or deciding one day to change what you wear. Change can be tasty, like trying new food so your best friend's mom doesn't think that you're rude. You talk about, you know, all the kinds of issues that we all deal with, but in such a simple way that children can grasp it.
Mm, yeah. And, you know, change, I mean, we know our kids are going to go through change, but we don't really help or support or assist, whether it's changing home or changing, you know, a sibling comes along or losing a grandparent or a pet or, you know. So what my hope for the books was to give parents, grandparents, godparents, teachers, you know, any caregivers to children, sort of tools that help them instill what they will be facing in life. You know, whether it's things like the ability to have a bad day. You know, that is not something that we allow our kids to have. We expect our kids to be happy all the time and positive all the time, and they can't be grumpy. And the truth is they have a full range of emotions. They are allowed to be happy, and they can be sad, and they can be mad, and they can scream, and they can. So it's sort of, it's giving something to poor, exhausted, tired parents and grandparents that are trying their best, just to sort of help them along the journey. Because being a parent myself to a four-year-old, I know the journey is full on and exhausting.
And the tendency for many parents is to praise their child so much and let the child think, I can do anything, but they're not able to fail.
Yep, that's absolutely true. And, you know, there are so many poems that sort of that hint to that, where allowing them to be human, you know, is such a big theme of all the books, where the bar is not about perfection and it's not about competition and it's not about achievement. And that's not going to get you love from your parents, and it's not going to get you love from the world. And so allowing parents to see their kids differently, that these kids are allowed to make mistakes. And by the way, they can get a B on a test, and they're not going to make you happy all the time. You know, sometimes I've had a lot of parents go, oh my God, these books are more for me than they are for my kids. And I like hearing that, because, you know, so many of us were not parented, you know, to the heart and soul. We were much more parented to discipline and being good boys and good girls.
Recently, someone sent me a link to a video song called Dream Small. And it's all about, you don't have to buy into that you have to be perfect at everything, and you can be grateful to be a teacher or to be a father or whatever it is.
Yeah, but I couldn't agree more with you.
Add that in here.
Yeah, I feel, you know, even in my own life, like, you know, I was brought up in some ways to be big and to be special. And when I'm not big and when I'm not being special in the world, like, what happens? The mind thinks I'm failing or not good enough or not performing. And there's a real need to sort of stop the big and special program. You look at the teenagers right now, they all want to be big and special. And, you know, I've had moments in my life of being big and special according to what the world wanted. And I can tell you it doesn't take away the feeling of, you know, not good enough or something still missing in my life. And so what I wanted to do early on, you know, with the Giggles and Joy books was to make sure that children know that anything they go after in their life is not about, you know, filling a gap or making them feel better about themselves. It's because they want to, it's because they choose to, it's because they love it. So, you know, those things, I mean, everything, the whole emotional range for children and helping them understand the world and that the world is a safe place, even though they're told every day it's not safe, you know, and where is home? Is home the four walls, which is likely to change when you look at the rate of divorce, or is home something on the inside? Is home when you're around people that love you and you feel great with? And, you know, so they're quite profound in sort of the sharing. You know, these books, a lot of people ask me, well, what age are they for? And I say, you know, I'd say from probably 3 to 7. I've had a lot of people buy them for younger kids because the illustrations are very fun and they're made for kids so that you can take them on a bit of a spiritual journey into their own heart and soul, where it's not just words and just mindset.
And I would find that the adults could really benefit from it too, because you see it in such a simple way.
Yeah, you know, there's a few poems in there where I've had a lot of adults email me and go, uh-oh, I think this one was for me, or, you know, I had a tear in my eye because I wish that this is one that I'd been taught. And what I hear too, feedback is, they're great ways to start conversations with your children about their inner world. You know, so many times we ask our kids about what happened at school and what happened to your friend and what's your homework, and you never really get a sense of what's your child feeling, what when they're daydreaming, what's it about, when they're worried, what's it about. And these themes can kind of, they can start you off. You know, there's one of the poems is called Sad and Mad, and I've done it in readings at school, and I love asking the kids what makes them sad. And it's amazing. It's like, you know, seeing a dead fly makes a kid sad, and you get such information as to who these little beings are. What makes you mad? What makes me mad when, you know, I can't, you know, do what I want or have what I want? But it helps you get to know your children better. That's what I've found also happens.
It's incredible. And my area is healing through love, so I was attracted to a section of your book, The Moon Loves You. So I want to just say some of these that would be so valuable for anyone to realize. The moon loves you. The butterflies love you. The birds love you. The owls love you. The stars love you. You know, and then at the end, the whole world loves you. Love is in everything and everyone. Just open your eyes and see. That would be beautiful for an adult who's suffering.
Yeah, and, you know, the two-minute background to that poem, I had a child that didn't sleep for nearly a year and a half. And who knows why, you know, I'll never know. And we loved him through it, and now he sleeps beautifully. But one of the poems started off like this, where for the half an hour at a time sometimes, and I had to get him back to sleep, I would say these kind of things. And I would come up with anything. The octopus loves you, the seagull loves you, the sharks love you. And I would go on. And it was so therapeutic for myself to realize that, you know, in a world that seems so missing of love, all I was telling this young little baby and beautiful soul was that there was a lot of love here for him.
Beautiful. All right, so I have a question to ask. You talk about educating kids below the neck. What do you mean by that, and how can we educate kids differently?
Yeah, you know, I feel like so much of academics is about engaging the mind and developing the brain and you know, testing and performance and comparison, and that the skills below the neck have been forgotten. and the skills below the neck are everything from the importance of emotions and the importance of the breath and the importance of, you know, ideas and dreams and visualizing and the importance of trusting your intuition and the importance of self-directed kindness. You know, we teach our kids to be kind to others. We never teach our kids to be kind to themselves. And then our kids grow up saying really mean things to themselves. So, you know, it's partly what my TED Talk is about, which is that when in a world where what is valued is above the neck, our kids grow up very disconnected from their body, from their gut, from what's a yes or a no, from who and what they love, from who they are. So that's what I mean. And, you know, the books are the beginning of letting them realize that their brain is not the only thing that they're going to get an A for and that they need to, you know, develop.
That's great. And then you talk about spiritual life skills. So what do you mean by those?
Yeah, so, you know, the subtitle of the book are Spiritual Life Skills for Kids. And I feel, you know, we focus in a sort of perfect triangle. There's sort of mind, body, spirit, you know, and that exists in all religions. And we do a good job at probably over-educating the mind. We're doing much in care of our children's bodies, but we're really not focused on their spirit. And so I really wanted to call attention to the fact that whether it's kids, teenagers, adults, old people, I think we're in a bit of a spiritual crisis where we're not paying attention. You know, you look at the suicides we've had lately. These are spiritual suicide crises. You know, of course there's mental health and of course there's physical health, but there's also a crisis of meaning, a crisis of why are we here? What are we doing? And to me, nurturing a child's spirit is nurturing the part that is about love, that's about optimism, that is about the fact that we live in a beautiful world, not a difficult, hard, scary world, to bring up humor and laughter and giggles and to have these books really coexist with all religions. You know, I've been privileged to be invited to all different types of schools, Jewish schools, all types. And, you know, they sit side by side with any traditional sort of more religious education that any parent would want to bring up. This is more, you know, Mother Teresa, Nelson Mandela. They're more sort of life-guiding principles of really raising beautiful humans on the inside.
So what three life skills do you as a parent practice with your child?
We practice lots, but if I had to choose three, we're very big on breathing. I believe, you know, whether it's I stop breathing when I'm stressed or when I'm upset or when I'm triggered by my child. We don't do timeouts, we don't do punishments, but we definitely do deep breaths. So when something's going on, we will usually stop, go to a different place. So we'll move away from where the argument or whatever has happened, sit on the couch, sit on the bed, and we'll take anywhere 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 deep breaths. And, you know, I'll do it as an animal. So I'll be like, okay, now we're doing lion breath, or how would a dinosaur breathe? And then we do a dinosaur breath. But, you know, the importance of breathing has been so documented by, you know, the people that know and health people and doctors, where it helps them recalibrate the left and the right side of their brain. It helps move oxygen. It helps, you know, slow down the blood. It helps their reactivity. It helps my reactivity as a parent. So breathing, very important. I don't think we teach our kids how to breathe, and then, you know, they get wound up and they become, you know, very emotional, and then we punish them for that. So breathing and being back in the body. You know, I think another one is just that all emotions are welcome. And so if someone's angry, it's okay. And if someone's really, really sad and wants to cry, it's absolutely okay. And that there's not a sort of, you know, stop crying or stop being angry or stop complaining. Like that, the stopping of those emotions, I think, is quite unhealthy. And I think keeping a wide emotional range, the emotion is acceptable. The behavior might not be, but the emotion is absolutely welcome. And then we're very big also on just gratitude. You know, we do a lot of thank you moments during the day and noticing and witnessing the blessings that are in our life and how we can sort of share and contribute to others.
Wow.
We do lots. We have a big forgiveness
skills.
One too. You know, we have a big forgiveness one too, where we forgive fast. We let things go fast. You know, there's the Hawaii Hoʻopanaʻopo prayer. you know, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, and I love you. And I taught this to my child when he was three, and he says it very often, you know, when he knows that something's there and it's sort of, he has to look in our eyes. He can't just say it, you know, underneath a pillow. He has to look in our eyes, engage, have some human contact. We say it back to him. But there's a sort of, there's a way for a child to repair. You know, sometimes children know they've done something wrong, but they don't have a skill to repair. They don't have a skill to come out of their room. I mean, it's hard enough to just say sorry. And so putting it in the form of this very sweet, simple prayer, I've found mm-hmm. it's really helped us, and it's helped a lot of parents that I've told it to.
What I'm hearing is that you're helping your child and other children to heal moment by moment so it doesn't build up, so they don't have mm-hmm. this upset event that happened and it's all suppressed and they're not supposed to express the feelings. And years later,
absolutely.
It's still in the amygdala. You know, it sounds
you're
like you're helping
right.
you know, to heal
yeah,
it
you know,
now.
I look at yesterday, you know, we had an incident at home and I got upset and he got upset. And you know, when we said our evening prayers that are very universal in nature, we do a lot of, you know, we're going to keep all the good things that happened today. We're going to send all the other stuff back to the light to have it go back to the light and be transformed. And, you know, there's no holding. There's no holding in the body, which is what makes people sick. There's no holding emotionally, which, you know, creates its own set of problems. And I have had to really grow as a parent to not then beat myself up, feel guilty, you know, go, oh my gosh, why did I say that or do that? Where if I'm teaching it to my child, I really need to role model it. And I cannot take it on and beat myself up about anything that happened an hour ago or the day before.
Your process is amazing, but I'm really struck by you talking about not holding in the body. I mean, I'm trained in a lot of different body therapy methods and body psychotherapy and somatics, and most people hold so much in their body, and they're not even aware of it.
I mean, you know what I do too, and I can't remember who told me to do this, and I either do it while he's awake or I do it when he's asleep, is I put my hand on his heart and solar plexus, and I basically set the intention to remove any pain, any upset, any sadness, any anger, anything that was wrongly processed or wrongly interpreted, anything that I might have said. And I imagine like glue in some ways. Like I literally imagine pulling it out of him, and then I literally send it back to the light. But I pull it out of him as an exercise so that he physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually does not have to hold that. You know, because we all know as kids that we made very wrong conclusions about what was said or done or why our parents left or why our parents shouted. And I am far from a perfect parent. And so I do it also as an exercise for myself of knowing that, you know, you're not going to damage your child and that you can continuously help in the healing process.
And what comes to mind as you're talking about that is Nelson Mandela in a prison cell for 27 years. Imagine someone having that skill from childhood to keep letting go of whatever the feelings are and sending it into the light and knowing,
absolutely.
You know, life is ahead of me and there's still
yeah,
more
absolutely.
I can do.
And you know what, Erica, I mean, we do it also when he hurts himself or when there's pain. Like the other day, you know, he caught his finger in something and we immediately put it in under water. And he, by himself at age 4, he said two things. He took the pain and he goes, send it back to the light, send it back to the light. So he was taking the pain literally out of his body. And then he started reciting his mantra, my body's a healing machine. My body's a healing machine. My body's a healing machine. It was so sweet. And I thought, oh, that feels so good as a parent. Not that I said it, right? Or not that I did any of those things because we've been doing them for years, but it's sufficiently embodied in him that that's his go-to, those two go-to skills.
It's incredible. So how did you come up with the title for this book? It's so uplifting and adorable, Giggles and Joy.
You know, there's three books. The first is Giggles and Joy. The second is You Are Loved. And the third is Being You. And, you know, for me, I went to what it is that the kids most needed to be reminded of. And I think kids lose their joy and their laughter and their giggles a bit too soon. and definitely adult, that's for sure. So I wanted to have something be very uplifting. I didn't want it to be a serious, you know, spiritual title. I wanted it to just be something that we all aspire to and we all want more of. The You Are Loved was pretty important. I mean, the very first poem in there is something I've been reciting since my child was born. You are loved, you are safe, you are guided, you are protected. There's nothing to fear. All fear is an illusion. I mean, that one, I know most of these by heart, but that one I definitely know by heart. But just that love is not about performance, and that there's, you don't need to do anything or be anything or change anything to be loved. And that whole book is about the broader definitions of love. And the third is really about uniqueness. You know, it's about being you. It's not about fitting into the consensus, or it's not about, you know, making anyone else, you know, your life fit what they want for you. And it was all different ways that children are allowed to be and exist. So that's where those titles came from. They weren't easy to, you know, because there's 8 life skills in every book, and it wasn't super easy because they you know, all the poems are about joy, and all the poems are about love, and all the poems are about your child's unique nature.
Yes, they're written with a happy tone. I felt that all the way through it. So
well,
I have another
you.
Question. You're welcome. With all your experience in sports and marathons and climbing Kilimanjaro and the motorcycle rides and daring adventures, do you inspire children to be athletic or daring, or do you let them find their own inspiration?
I've never been asked that question before. You know, I think one of the things that children need is they need inspiration more than they need information. And I think same thing for grown-ups, you know, like what changes people is inspiration. It's not more information. Like everyone has information about how to quit smoking, how to lose weight, how to do it, that they still don't do it. And so I think what kids need right now are stories. They are both men and women who have sometimes done things differently than what they think is the only way to go. So they must go to college, and then they must get a job, and then they must get married, and then they must have children. Kids have so many of those stories already that those are not the stories they need. So if I'm asked about my story, my biggest commitment to children is to always tell them the truth. Like, I feel children can handle anything, but that we need to respect the fact that, you know, that they can handle what the truth is, which is, you know, did I disappoint my dad when I left my big job? Yes, absolutely, 100%. Was that his own journey that he had to accept? Yes, absolutely. Do you see? So I tell them the truth. I don't kind of couch it in Kilimanjaro was easy, because Kilimanjaro is much harder mountain than people assume it is. You know, I really like sort of being balanced, which means if I'm not taking care of my body, things don't go well for me in my life. So health is very high on my list, and I certainly embody that, and I certainly share that at home, and I share that as much as I can with kids and parents. But again, it's hard when parents are not taking care of themselves. There's no self-care, there's no physical or mindful activity to then sort of, you know, introduce that at home. So my hope with the books, and I'm doing an online parenting course, is to make sure that the parents feel that they have these skills. Because you can read a poem, and then when, you know, you read a poem about telling the truth, and then the parent at home clearly doesn't tell the truth, and it's sort of, you want those two to really be aligned. So I wanted to have something for the parents as much as these books are for the kids.
And so can you tell how people can get in touch with you, how they can get access to the course, to the books?
Of course. So the books are available either individually, if you just want to try one, on Amazon, of course, and also as a gift series. I sort of really recommend people just get all 3 books, because if you get one, then you're not getting the one about courage or grown-ups or self-love or gratitude. So they're currently on sale as well. I just took $5 off, so that's a little thing. So they're on Amazon. More about the books, and we've had endorsements. We've had lots of parents and teachers, and there's lots of lovely words. That's on gigglesandjoy.com. And then my personal website is Ariane Studio, ariane studio.com. And there you can find where I'm at, events, one-on-one coaching, the other books I've written, an app I've done, and then the online course together with my TED Talk on life skills for kids will be up in October, November.
All right, so very quickly, we don't have too much time left. If you could talk just about what you covered in the TED Talk and what this Mindful app is about.
Yeah, so the TED Talk, it's a short talk because they're getting shorter and shorter, was really about three life skills that I feel we need to be focused much more with our kids. And the first was what I call humanity skills, which is really helping both adults and kids get permission to be human. And what that means, and it's more about self-love and self-compassion and self-understanding and teaching children to know themselves, not only everything they need to know about the world. The second is emotional skills, and just the whole realm of emotions, which is what, you know, can help us or get us into trouble. Breathing, getting them back in their body. Skills like intuition. You know, most parents have never mentioned the word intuition to their children, which is crazy, absolutely crazy. Like, we are all about intuition in our household. We use it all the time. We ask for it. We acknowledge it. We celebrate it. You know, it's not something that is celebrated. And the third skill is change skills, adaptability skills, which I'm very big on. And, you know, change is the number one constant, and yet we're never taught it. And there's no reason for that, because my first book was on change and, you know, what are the principles of people that are good at change? That book is called The First 30 Days. And then the app is called Mindful 365. And that is for people who want to do some of the inner work and they want to learn and improve and be a better version of themselves and contribute. But they don't have time for the 300-page self-help books or the workshops or the seminars or even, you know, the yoga or meditation. And so I basically compressed everything I've known and read and the best of what I've learned in the last two decades into a small paragraph once a day of an idea, an action, an emotion, an invitation, something to do for yourself or others. It's a lovely program. And the people that find it, they just love it because it just feels like it's your own little, you know, inner journey curriculum. It's on your phone. No one needs to know. You do it when you want. We send you a little reminder at the time that you want. But you feel like you're doing something really kind and lovely for yourself. So that's Mindful 365.
It's just beautiful. We're out of time. And thank you so much, Ariane de Bombozan, for speaking today. What a gift
you
are.
Thank you. Bless you.
And bless you, too.